This interview is made possible by the View Conference, the biggest computer graphics conference in Italy. Our dates for 2022 are from the 16th to the 21st of October. We hope to see you in Italy or online. For more information about View Conference, please visit our website, viewconference.it. Today we welcome Epic Games' Marc Petit. Marc is a visionary. Marc has always been on the cutting edge of digital media. Thank you for being here with us. Thank you for making the time.
Well, thank you, Maria. It's great to be here. We love what you do. We love the View, and so happy to be here.
Nowadays, everyone is talking about the metaverse. There's so much hype around the metaverse, and everyone has an opinion about it. So let's start with your definition of what the metaverse is.
Yeah, always a tricky question, but I think for me, the simplest way to think about it is it's always a long answer, but let's start with it. It's really the extension of the internet, the real-time 3D technology. And what it means that the experience you can provide on the internet go beyond just watching a bunch of pixels. It means that you have agency over the content, you can interact. So that's one dimension that is very important. You can customize your content in real time. And then the other aspect that real-time 3D brings, and particularly gaming technology, is the multi-user aspect. So you can be social first. So everything you do in the metaverse, you can do with your friends, your party, your colleagues, and you can have, because you're in a 3D space, you can have this collaborative slash social experience. So for me, the metaverse is about interactivity, having agency over the content. It's about being social first. But it's the internet. So that's why, you know, when I read something about the metaverse, I have a trick, is I replace the words metaverse with internet and I see the sentence makes sense. Because that's really what it is. It's, you know, we don't build the metaverse, we will build in the metaverse. No one company can own the metaverse like no one company was able to own the internet, even if AOL tried. And the other thing is, it's going to be a very pervasive part of our lives, because that social component is fundamental to all of us. And after 2 years of pandemic, we see that, you know, we have relatively bad collaboration tools like Zoom, because, you know, they're 2D and they're very limited. They only allow one conversation at a time. When we can have shared virtual spaces and everything, I think we're bound to spend more of our professional, personal, and social life. The way we build it, we have a historical responsibility as an industry to build it right for ourselves and our kids.
How do you think the metaverse will change people's day-to-day lives?
You know, social media right now, you know, is born. The current social media platform, they're like Instagram and Facebook, and I think they're born on the back of the commercialization of digital pictures and digital video. And then it leads to people liking things and commenting, a very pretty passive attitude. I think with the metaverse and a 3D space and voice-based communication, you know, you have to behave differently. I think it's a much higher bar and probably a better way to have social interaction. So I think it's that social component is what's going to make it very, very different to me. We're going to move from the era of just being passive and liking and in kind of the anonymity on the internet to being engaged in the content. And we see it in Fortnite. I mean, Fortnite, there is no text chat, it's just voice chat. And that's why there is no toxic environment, because it's one thing to insult somebody on a keyboard when, you know, you have no repercussions. Another thing is to tell something to somebody's face. So I do believe that it's for me, the thing that's fundamental is that engagement that comes with those 3D platforms. Ultimately, we'll get co-presence. I think it's going to be one of the hardest problems to solve. But I think, you know, that the fact that we can be with people and do something with people, you know, this layer of social interaction is what's going to change everything. It's going to be very useful in our personal lives, very useful in our social life, and very useful in our professional life. So it will ultimately be everywhere.
There has been so much investment and press around the whole idea of the metaverse. What are the stakes for Epic in getting this right?
Well, I mean, it's a great opportunity, and we, you know, it's an opportunity and responsibility. We want to contribute we want to build a good business, number one. I mean, we're not a philanthropic organization, we're a business. And we think, you know, on the base of Fortnite, we can build a beautiful corner of the metaverse and something that's relevant for social entertainment. It's our priority. And, you know, we launched a new chapter, and I think people, you know, can see or experience by themselves, you know, an environment when multiple brands can coexist, when there is fun interactivity, you know, when it's a social first experience, when people can actually have fun together. And I think that's kind of one of our agendas. And the other agenda we have is with the Unreal Engine is enabling a lot of people to build their own miniverse, microverses, metaverses, and also giving them all the tools to do this. That's always what we did at Epic. We do our own games, we share them with the community. That's the same mental model applies to metaverse. We do, you know, our own environment with the Unreal Engine and the Epic Online Services, our identity management system, everything, and we make that available to the community so that we create, you know, a bigger momentum and a bigger community around us, of which we benefit, but also benefits the community. So we want to do this for the metaverse as well. And then we have this added, you know, desire and voice that there are ways that we think things should be different. Like we've seen, you know, platforms taking a bigger share of the economic equation. We don't think it's right. You know, we think that in the creator economy, the people that drive engagement, the people that create the good content should get the lion's share of the revenue, and the platform should have a much more modest share. So that's also an added agenda that we have at Epic, is to try to lay a foundation that's much healthier for creators, because we assume everybody will ultimately become a creator. But we want an open and fair metaverse, and that's what we're trying to build, all aspects of an open and fair metaverse.
Now, do you envision this to be a single connected metaverse or more of an explosion of experiences?
I think it's a way to bring the topic of interoperability. We're all about diversity, you know, and we think, just like the internet, I mean, it should be a very rich and diverse experience, and it should be, you know, ultimately everybody can relatively easily create a website and have a presence on the internet. I think the same needs to, those principles needs to survive into the metaverse. Now, the topic of interoperability is much more complex. You know, exchanging fully simulated world is going to take time. I mean, as an industry, we're still struggling to exchange materials, right? So think about fully simulated worlds. It's going to take a bit of time. So I think we have to have modest ambitions in the short term around interoperability, but we have to have that ambition as an industry. And again, you know, when the internet was created, interoperability was mandated by the, you know, the people funding it, the US government. There is no mandate right now. So it's upon us as an industry to step up and create that world of interoperability, which allows everybody to thrive and compete on merit. So hopefully we don't get into a world of walled gardens where things are driven by constraint, but we get in a world where, hey, may the best win, the best content, the best technology. And so, you know, I'm with my colleague Patrick Cozzi from Cesium, we have a podcast called Building the Open Metaverse, when we try to put wood in the fire and have the conversation week after week with the people who are building the internet. And what's interesting is we've recorded 8 or 9 episodes now. Everybody wants it. I mean, the people who are actually doing it, the technical people in the boardrooms, the business people, there might be other considerations. But so because I'm an optimist and a positive guy, I think we can, if we can get together and around things like USD and GLTF, create, you know, a foundation for interoperability that would allow people to move their content from one platform to the next, which makes, you know, the diversity viable. Now, the concept of identity and ownership in the metaverse still needs to be figured out. Ownership, we have fully centralized model like NFTs built on the blockchain. I mean, whether decentralization is good or not is more a philosophical / political conversation. I'm more of a pragmatic business person. I worry about the regulation. I don't know. There are multiple ways to do distributed databases and you know, and manage those aspects. Not 100% sure that NFTs are here to stay for a long time. You know, there will be other solution, you know, credit card company, they do compensation and they do smart contracts in a way that is regulated, that the regulator likes. So I'm, you know, I'm observing that space, the crypto space. I know the concepts are important, abstracting the ownership from the platforms. I don't know what's the sustainable implementation that we are willing to live with as a society. I don't know what that is. So it's a lot of we unpack a lot of complex topic, but my focus right now personally is setting the base technically so that we can actually implement that interoperability. So we work with Kronos Group, we work with the USD team, we work with the Academy Software Foundation and try to move this agenda forward.
What tools and technologies do you need to do that?
You mentioned it, I've been a CG guy for forever. You know, I grew up with that industry, starting in 1988 now, so it's a long time ago. And what's interesting now is we're really turning the model on its head. So what we're trying to do, particularly at Epic, is making sure that bringing the real world, you know, the photorealistic world, it becomes inexpensive all the way down to bringing the cost to zero, so that all the work we do, you know, scanning technology, the work on MetaHuman, the work on Quicksolar, all those things, is making sure that we can look people in the eye and say, you know what, creating photorealistic content is going to be virtually free. And you can spend all your money on art directing and creating what matters, which is the art around the content. And, you know, nobody wants a photorealistic game. We haven't seen any because nobody, I mean, there is always something that, you know, has to be creative about it. Now, a lot of people need, you know, a replica of real life. So we're going to cover that. We would like the metaverse to be indistinguishable from reality at times. At other times, we'll want the metaverse to be a fantasy experience, which is art directed. So that's the all the principles that if you look at our roadmap, the things we do around UE5 and Nanite and Lumen and real-time GI and, you know, virtualized geometry system to handle almost infinite complexity and metahumans and mega scans. And all of that stuff is about implementing that vision where, hey, it doesn't cost much. It's actually extremely affordable to create photorealistic content. And on that base, you can create your experience. You know, if it's a digital to digital replica, you're done. If you're an artist, you can spend all of your energy, all your time, all your money into that art direction. And I think that's, you know, that's how we create content that people will want to experience. Because at the end of the day, that's the goal, right? Is creating something that is meaningful, generates emotions, or trust, you know, gets the right message, and people are willing to consume. So we're building this foundation at Epic around UE5, and we want to show that you can, the things we've been talking for 20 years that conversions of film and games can actually happen. You know, you can actually interact with content, film quality content, and. You know, it's a long endeavor, but hopefully in 2022 with the release of UE5, you know, we prove people that we've gone a long way towards implementing that vision. But the amount of tools to be built is infinite. Tools are always too complex, they're always too expensive, they're always too slow. So we have an infinite amount of work to do to make them easy to use, you know, and fast.
Epic has some powerful tools that are relevant to the metaverse, like Unreal Engine, as you were illustrating, MetaHumans, and game platforms like Fortnite. Can you add anything else to what Epic is bringing to the metaverse party?
Yeah, there's a lot more. So the core tools we talk about is the Unreal Engine and that ability to create that content. So now the problem with 3D content is always hard to consume, right? So we're building a lot around it to make sure that, you know, we accelerate the commoditization of 3D content, because the metaverse will be born out of the commoditization of 3D. So we need 3D to be easy. We need 3D to be everywhere. The first platform we need 3D to be is the web. So, you know, through Sketchfab and all the work we do there, I want to make sure that you can easily share your content using those open platforms like GLTF or USD and share it on the web. That's a way to bring people into the metaverse. So it's like starting adding 3D to their website and all of that. The other part of things we're doing is around collaboration, you know, making the process, the authoring process collaborative, and also working on things like cloud streaming, because, you know, it's fine to rely on a device to play back the content, but it's also, there are times when it's good, but there are times when it's a constraint. You want to click on the URL and get to the content So some of the answer is WebGL and all of that web technology. Some of the answer is cloud streaming, where We had a lot of investment last year in containerizing the engine, making sure that anybody can create a pixel streaming service out of it. And we start to see a lot of online platforms, some online games that use that pixel streaming technology. So still expensive, still early days. We'd like to stream VR ultimately. I mean, NVIDIA has some interesting technology with Cloud XR. So we are investing heavily in that space as well, making sure that the consumption of the content becomes much easier so that it goes beyond compiling an executable and sending it to a machine. You know, we do cloud streaming, we do WebGL exports and all of those things. So that's, you know, that packaging for me, it's also really important because that's going to allow people to lean into the metaverse, to lean into real-time 3D and progressively so that you don't have to wait. The other thing we do is at Epic is we're, you know, through our Fortnite platforms and things like, you know, the Sketchfab store has, you know, 6 million users. We have an audience. You know, we're building an audience that's interesting and valuable for our partners, for ourselves, and, you know, a place where people are willing to come because they see quality content. And that those platforms are open to other people today, you know, using Fortnite Creative, anybody can create a game instantly available on the platform. I mean, think about this. Have you tried to create a game and make, you know, yourself make it available on a console? That's very, very hard proposition. Today, if you create a game in Fortnite Creative, it goes on all consoles instantaneously, all PCs and all mobile platform instantaneously. It's a one-click publish model. So that is something that's very powerful. You know, we do it. Some other people like Core are doing it with Unreal Engine. You're creating those meta games and you can create other games, a little bit like Roblox. I think that's, you know, often known as user-generated content. So that's also another big aspect of what we do is, you know, opening up this platform. So the tools in Fortnite Creative today may not be as good as we want them to be, but hey, maybe we're working on that.
What are some of the specific benefits that Unreal Engine can bring?
The two fundamental benefits above and beyond the quality of the tools, the fact that source code is available with licensing terms that are extremely broad. You know, there is no catch. I mean, you download the code, it's yours forever. The engine license agreement is on the web. People can read it and figure it out. So the other aspect of the economics, you know, our strategy is very, very, you know, our commitment is, we don't see the point of monetizing tools. It's just slow everybody down. You know, there are opportunities for monetization that we get a revenue share in games and, you know, but, you know, so those tools are open and free. So that's number one thing. And they happen to be the best too. You know, and then if you look at, you know, and again, look, think about it. You know, if you put your code, your source code on the internet, it better be good, right? So it kind of a self-imposed pressure towards quality. And we're also teaching the industry we told the industry how to do real-time ray tracing because we put our ray tracing implementation, you know, on GitHub in January 2019 or 2018, I don't remember. It's the same for Nanite. I mean, we expect to see more virtualized geometry systems because it's also our contribution to the community, to the advancement of the art, because we fundamentally believe that the more real-time 3D, the more gaming technology becomes prominent, the better it is for Epic. So, you know, and the other part of things is we are an entertainment company that does technology. We're not a technology company. So we don't, it's got noted, but today as we speak, we haven't released UE5, but UE5 is already powering one of the biggest games in the world because the chapters, you know, the new chapter of Fortnite is actually running on UE5. So we're dogfooding our technology. And by the time it ships to game developers, they're probably going to feel confident that the bugs have been ironed out because guess what? We got a pretty good game working on it on top of having the previews out there for a full year. So that notion of a dog footing, you know, the content and, you know, we've also, you know, we cannot today as we record this thing, we cannot talk about the Matrix experience, but I think by the time this is out in the open, people will have seen the Matrix experience, the Unreal Engine 5 experience. You know, all of this content that we do is not just to show the capabilities of the engine, but it's also to make it work. And we'll release a lot of assets, you know, like we when we talk about the animation keynote, like the Meerkat with Weta, it was all released. I mean, anybody can download it for free. So we had this approach to product development, which is you know, about project-driven R&D. And when we put out something, it's good because we know it's been used and it's working. It's going to be the case of UE5 with Fortnite and a host of other games and the kind of demos like the Matrix demo.
For movies, you need complete photorealism. Is the same true for the metaverse? Or do we just need visuals which are just good enough?
I believe in art direction. I believe, like we talked about animation again, you know, we're up to 62 projects. There's only a handful of them that are photorealistic. And even when they are photorealistic, they are art directed. So I do believe in the empowerment and in art direction, you know, it's... So there, when you do live action integration in visual effects, yes, you have to match the real environment. You have to be photorealistic in that context, but there's a whole other context where you need to art direct. But again, you know, if you think about the world of Pandora and the works of James Cameron, when you create new animals, new vegetation, it's great to build it on top of a photorealistic platform. You know, the Navi skins is not like a human skin. It's not photorealistic, but it's much easier to develop that look when you can build on top of a platform that does photorealism for free. So I think we used to develop some simpler content because it was too expensive to get to the photorealism level. But I look at Pixar movies, I watch Frozen 2 with my daughter. And when you look at the complexity of those environments, even though it's stylized, it's actually very complex. And I think it's a perfect example of why, you know, having like even Megascans assets can be a fantastic base to create a stylized world, you know, because it retains that level of detail that you can see, you know, again, for me, the high watermark is those Pixar movies. And so photorealism doesn't need to be a goal, but it's a fantastic tool to create, you know, fantasy world and art directed content.
Do you think in the future, the imagery will be photorealistic by default?
Well, in my mind, what I say is photorealism becomes free. It's just there. It's like you take a picture and you can use it in Photoshop to retouch. Well, in 3D, you know, we do all this work in photogrammetry, reality capture. You know, we have all this mega scan pipeline that allows to create reusable assets from photos. So it will be very easy to scan. I'm not saying it's happening today in 2021 or 2022, but, you know, over the fullness of time, a few years, this ability to grab very, very complex assets from the real world is going to be much easier. And that's going to be the starting point. Just like you can retouch a picture, you know, you don't have to hand paint all the pixels. You can start from photography. I think the same paradigm will happen for 3D. Finally, it's been long in the making.
What areas are still in development? What's next for Unreal Engine?
The ambition of UE5 is huge, and I'm pretty impressed with the engineering team that we are where we are today. We said spring 22, we'll be there in spring 22. It's a huge endeavor. But the amount of, the amount of work that is left to be done, you know, the quality of the tools, like look at MetaHumans. I mean, it was a great example about how you simplify a very, very complex and expensive process and make it available to virtually everybody. We have to achieve that for other area. Like the fact that, let's assume for a minute that we finally get a real-time renderer that can crunch to infinite amount of content. Who's going to generate that content? You know, you're not going to have an artist place, you know, trees and rocks by hand on the side of all the roads. So there's an infinite amount of work on proceduralism, on, you know, using AI to help, you know, AI-based artistry is a concept that I believe in. Like it's in the MetaHuman creator. We put the ring factor on the uncanny valley. We prevent you from creating a human that doesn't look like a human. I think we can teach, you know, we can help the tools understand the real world and, you know, to create, so that creating that super, super complex content doesn't take 100 people or 1,000 people. And we see games today being built with 1,000 people. We want to empower teams of 5 to do that level of content. And that's a lot about AI and proceduralism. And that's an infinite amount of, I mean, animation is still very complex. You know, it takes many years to learn those existing tools to create high quality animation. I think we can we can do much more, and we are doing much more in the domain of, you know, simplifying this process. So I think we have a lot of work ahead of us, which is exciting. Is, you know, I mean, I'm passionate about tools. That's what I've been doing all my life. But it's fascinating to see, you know, the potential of those AI techniques and how they can really empower artists. It's not going to take jobs away. They're going to take the drudgery of the process and the boring part of the job. But, you know, they really enable creativity and art.
In your view, what other important areas still need attention in creating the metaverse?
Well, the one thing is, you know, it's been a constant in everything I've been doing, you know, since the early days of software management, is about accessibility. And accessibility is a very broad concept. It starts with, you know, cost, it starts with hardware, it starts with user interface, and starts with the availability of content. And I think we need to make that stuff more accessible. I mean, it's not fun to do stuff for the elite or the happy few. I have no interest and no, I mean, we like those guys, the high-end guys, because they do amazing work, but we are always more, you know, I always feel better when you see a small team do the work of a 300-person team. Personally, I think it's more satisfying. So working on all aspects of accessibility, like learning tools. We arrived at Epic, we created this learning platform and invested a lot of content into it. So there's multiple aspects to accessibility, but I think that's the place when we need to work and work and work. And those tools are still too hard. Let's be honest, they're too hard. We as an industry, and I was discussing, you know, with Guido from Adobe and Sebastian there and all those guys, I mean, we all agree that we have ways to go to make those content creation tools really accessible and fun to use. And I think that's our big challenge, is that accessibility, that those new paradigm and everything. And, you know, we want those VR tools. We want to do work. When we do AR, we want to do in-place editing. We don't want to work on a window. We want to work on the content inside a content. And we haven't really touched on any of those things. You know, we're still like in the 70s with the mouse on the screen trying to lay out points. It's a little bit better than 70s, but you know, we're still, I think from a creation perspective, we are, you know, there's a lot of innovation that can and will happen.
How will people access the metaverse in the future?
I mean, for me, the gateway is the cloud. We will not ignore local compute capabilities. I mean, you know, you have to live in a world when you're going to have like wearable device, like watches and glasses, like with a few watt of powers, then you're going to get in your phone, in your pocket, another device that probably has 10 watts of power. And then you'll be 5G connected or 6G connected to an edge compute that has 100 watts of power. So the challenge for it is going to be, you know, that chain. This is how you access this content. And us as human, but also, you know, anticipate a world when every glass panel is actually a display of interactive content. So our houses will be connected similarly. And, you know, maybe our windows, remember the opening scene of Total Recall, the breakfast scene with Schwarzenegger. I want to wake up on Tatooine or Pandora myself. I can't wait, you know, I would be choosing that environment to move. So we're going to live in this connected world where it all ends up in the cloud somewhere, somehow, and there will be layers of devices. You know, and I think for me, I look at the wattage and the power, because that's what's going to define the capabilities of each and every other device. We're not going to wear a computer on our heads, that's for sure. So, you know, heat dissipation, battery and everything, even though there will be progress there, it's still going to be a few watts. And, you know, data centers have always been 10 times more powerful than phones, and phones will always be 10 times more powerful than wearables. Even though everybody moves up the chain in terms of power, they're always going to have those three classes of devices. And so it's a challenge for us from the engineering point of view, because now we have three layers. Where does what happen? You know, we are going to have to work to harness that new three-stage architecture to deliver the content.
Beyond the wearables and devices, as you were just illustrating, like cell phones and AR glasses, how about on a bigger scale, like entire buildings, maybe?
Well, it's happening, you know, because the commoditization of LED screens, I can't wait to see, you know, the price of transparent LED screens to go. I mean, the quality and the price of transparent LED screens, because transparent LED screens could be magic, because you could, like, you can do AR in real life, right? It's going to be magical. But already, you know, like, you look at virtual production. I mean, we create, like, these gigantic aquariums of LED screens to immerse people into the content. And that's practical. It's happening every day now. We work with a company in Montreal called Moment Factory for the AT-AT headquarters in Dallas. You know, the whole side of the building is LED screens, and we play back video on it, but we also put reactive content, you know, content that changes according to the weather, time of day, or whether there is people around the building. So that is today for me, you know, because those LED screens are, you know, the LED screens are available. We see a lot of architectural component, airports, you know, concert halls, stadiums now have those gigantic LED screens. What was important is to get to a place where you don't just play back video on it, create some real interactive content on it, and get that content to you know, to be living and breathing, so that it can adjust to the architecture, it can adjust to the conditions, it can adjust to the event. And I think that's is today. I mean, we look at the LA Rams Stadium in Los Angeles, this new NFL stadium with this gigantic Oculus screen, and it's all powered by 3D interactive content. And, you know, we see more and more buildings integrated those screens into their design. You know, you walk in the lobby of the Autodesk building in San Francisco, it's all screens and beautiful content. So I think this is here to stay. Right now, we need to be able to cloud stream. Well, we do put a computer behind every one of those screens. So we need to get those devices. We need to get those screens straight up connected to the cloud. We need to figure out the latency, but we'll figure it out. I trust the hardware people, so that when we can cloud connect every one of those screens, suddenly what I'm describing, putting interactive content on it, become much easier.
Many of the things that we'll be able to do in the metaverse will be analogous to the things that we do in the real world. For example, meeting friends, playing games, consuming media, shopping. What can the metaverse offer that is completely new that we can only do in the metaverse?
That's a trick question. I actually don't have an answer for this one. I'll give you a biased answer. For me, I used to be a heavy traveler. I mean, I was always spent, you know, for the past 25 years, a lot of time in planes and traveling. And after the pandemic, I'm like, man, I don't want to travel anymore. I mean, I want to travel when I decide to travel, but the reset of the norms around being able to perform things remotely and having this sense of core presence and being able to achieve something without physically, that's for me a huge boon. And then letting me choose when I want to travel. Like, I used to fly to New Zealand for one meeting with James Cameron. I don't want to do this ever again. But it was the other way we see to be face-to-face. But I think that's the beauty of the metaverse, is it will give us the choice. Hopefully, again, the optimist in me said, I'll get to choose, you know, when I physically invest in traveling and changing spaces because I like it and I want to meet people in the flesh, and when I can do things virtually. I think that's going to be that being efficient virtually is the big thing in the metaverse that you can do in real life. So that's, hopefully it lightens the load, the wear and tear on the bodies to have to, especially for business people, to have to go around and be allow us to be extremely selective in our face-to-face interaction. We want face-to-face, we need face-to-face. But if I could choose, it would be much better. So that's how I would, but I think a lot of creative people will create amazing games, you know, especially with AR, when you can start to hide digital content in the real world or hide or display. I'm sure in terms of interactive entertainment, there will be a lot of innovations.
Now, let's talk a little bit about cultural impact. And you were talking about before about making the metaverse open, accessible, and collaborative. How achievable is that? The internet was once considered to be open and accessible, but now we're constantly plagued by trackers and ads and paywalls.
I think this is a question we need to, first we need to educate ourselves and educate people around us as you know, citizens of the world. And I think we have to vote with our dollars and our actual voting power, because these are fundamental regulation issues. What you describe, you know, the evolution of what used to be an open and distributed web into something that has a few centralized, total integrated product. That's how you, that's the proper name for walled gardens, I believe. and then the fact that we became tracked and we became the product, I think it's up to us. I think what makes me optimistic about the metaverse and the real-time 3D technologies, at the core of the technology, that's what I was trying to allude earlier. You know, it's based on engagement, not on passive comment or watching. It's not, we're not going to be thumbing through endless lists of pixels. We will be interacting. We'll have a sense of co-presence with other people. We'll talk to other people. So the optimistic thing says it's going to be a more, by definition, it's going to be a more humane environment. It's going to be, you know, I think a lot of the problem with the internet also come from the anonymity and the fact that, you know, the behaviors that we're observing, and then at least and then that became, is room for manipulation, because, you know, there is something about human beings is like negative. So it's like negative news and negative sentiments travel faster than positive sentiment. Probably laws of physics somewhere that I missed, but, you know, and then this notion of echo chambers. I don't know how we saw this echo chamber and we're all like drinking our own Kool-Aid all the time. But these are real problems that we need as a society, we need to fix. But I think the real-time 3D technology is probably a better, more engaging technology. So, you know, we can build different kind of platforms, and it's a platform change. So it's a generational platform change. So it's an opportunity to maybe for change of the guard, you know? So obviously companies like Facebook think that they want to further their dominance from the current platform to the next platform. Well, more power to them, good luck to them. But I think we as people can choose to use their product or not. You know, it's not a foregone conclusion that the practices of the, you know, the Web 2.0 video-based platform is to survive in the metaverse. So I do believe that we need to fully understand the potential of the technology and the fact that, you know, he will, that interactivity, that agency, that engagement, I think could be put to good use. And then from an economical perspective, we can create a new economy where creators, if you create a fair amount for creators, you know, it's going to be, people can create, you know, can express themselves and create their own jobs, you know, and generate economical value in this digital space. I mean, that's a beautiful prospect. You know, it's probably more fun to do that than we'll need a lot of other jobs, but I think it's, you know, it's a potential of a $1 trillion economy right there, which could be, you know, more distributed. And if we do it right, more fair and more open. But it's not a given, it's us, it's upon us. It's I said multiple times, it's our historical responsibility as we lay the foundation of this new platform as technologists and as people to make the right choices collectively.
Do you think the metaverse will become like most other platforms, tightly controlled by a few large players who will charge everyone else a percentage of their revenue for the right to be on that platform? How do you keep a spirit of freedom, fairness, and equal opportunity on a platform that will take so much investment to build and establish?
Platform having fees is fair because you need to compensate it for the service to provide. Things become unfair when that compensation is out of proportion with the service that is rendered, which is our beef with the current app stores. You know, we're not against platform fees. We're against exorbitant platform fees. And where the exorbitants come from, the fact that, hey, well, we do this because we can, because of the, you know, monopoly, duopoly situations. So nothing is platform fees. It's fair. People, you know, people need to be paid fairly for the service. It's all about this notion of being fair. And that's why, you know, setting the base of platform that are open, you know, and having interoperabilities would mean that you create that fluidity that if people are unhappy, they actually can leave. I think this is how, I mean, this is the fundamental of competition and a fair level playing fields. We, at Epic, we like to win on merit. And every time we put our mind to something, we then want to win and be successful. You know, we are very competitive, we're not egalitarian. But on the other side, again, it's on merit. Everything we do around our platforms and the world we want to live in, because we treat our customers the way we want to be treated, is we create that openness and that, you know, that fluidity that that's the natural forces of competition, which are real and good, happen. You know, it's competition is only bad when it's distorted competition. So I think that's, you know, that finding ways to let, you know, so platforms should collect platform fees, you know, that are commensurate with the service they render. And, you know, and then it has to be a level playing field. And I think for me, the level playing field is multiple level is also the small guy against the big guy. In the world of creators, an individual can make the world difference. I mean, I can create a skin in Fortnite, you know, that would compete or something that could compete with the entirety of Marvel. That's cooler than the Marvel as an individual. And that's what we want to enable. You know, we want the small guys to have the same tools and the same opportunity so that they can win on merit, with, you know, even against the behemoths. Especially for content creation. I mean, content creation has always been a small team activity. So the empowerment of small team is something that is very important to us. But we, the citizens, we, the regulators, are going to have to be careful about decisions we make so that we keep the playing field level, actually.
Obviously, the metaverse will require laws to govern it. Who will make the laws for the metaverse and who will enforce them? Will it be the companies, the industry, the governments, something else?
I mean, everybody has their own opinions on the amount of regulation. I mean, I live for 5 years in the United States and I've lived in a country where the very existence of government, it doesn't really matter to people. I'm French. I'm used to much more passionate conversations about government and politics. And I live in Canada, which is some sort of happy medium. It's a very hard question, but I, for example, you know, when we were talking about crypto, I do believe that technologies that are conducive to you know, the development of an underground economy may not be the right thing, you know, for society at large, you know, because we know that, and again, it becomes a political conversation much quicker. So I do believe, you know, that the regulator has to do their job. And it's going to be a challenge because look at the average age of of the government around the world. You know, we have 70-year-old people running the biggest countries in the planet. How are they going to understand, you know, what is going on really right now? Do people understand what is really going on with crypto and the amount of money that's going underground and being traded on those platforms? And we don't, you know, so it's actually a fascinating prospect to see how will the regulator first understand what is going on and two, do something about it and how fast can they react, because technology is evolving much faster than legislation. So there will always be a gap. But you know, we assume there will be regulation at Epic. We like, it's our position on NFT games on the Epic Game Store. Anything that's legit can come on the Epic Game Store. We don't have any philosophical issue. We just want to make sure that what we present to our consumers, our players, the kids that are on the platform are legit and safe. And it will always be the case for us. I mean, providing things that are safe for people is going to be a priority. And we sincerely hope that the regulation will keep up with the reality, because it would be hard for a company to make rules. We don't want to be in that position.
Science fiction has predicted so many things: space travel, satellites, video calls, and even the metaverse. Science fiction also is full of cautionary tales. will the metaverse be a utopia or will it be a dystopia?
I think technology will help people and society. So I think the metaverse will be great. I can't wait for it to happen. You know, my mom is in France. I would love to have more time with her. You know, she cannot go to Canada because of the healthcare system. You know, any technology that helps me spend more time with her as she's getting older and co-presence and everything is going to be beautiful. So, you know, I think it's, of course, dystopia. I lived 5 years in the United States between 2016 and 2021. Believe me, there are moments I could not believe the news. I was living through things that were inconceivable for me as a French person, being raised, you know, with French principles and French politics, you know, observing 2016 to 2020 in the United States of America. The worst can happen. You know, some of it is happening. But I think, you know, we have to try to use all those tools as a force for good.
So to conclude, what is for you personally the most exciting promise of the metaverse?
So there are two things. One is that, so for me personally, you know, that social first aspect and spending more time with the people I like, you know, my kids are all over the planet now. My family is back in Europe. My brothers are back in Europe. So that, you know, that is bringing people together is the number one thing as an individual, as a professional, you know, the empowerment of creators in small teams and finally getting people to give them tools to express themselves, create art and make money with it. I think it's if I can contribute a little bit to that, you know, I think I'll be very happy. You know, we started at TDI in 1988 and then Softimage and then Autodesk. And then I think it's fantastic. The progress that we've made, there's a lot more to be done, but I think already we're well down the path of creating, you know, of supporting those creators. And I think that's professionally, that would be my, you know, the achievement I would want to do.